Contact us at usaradiohealth.com. That's usaradiohealth.com.
More Republican senators are speaking out about the crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border.
Illegal crossings on the southern border are at a 15-year high, according to Border Patrol data. Republican lawmakers say that the current surge is because of President Biden's reversal of the border policies of the previous administration. Congressman Michael McCaul says the result has been a humanitarian crisis. The Texas Republican tells Fox News that cartels and smugglers have taken advantage of families looking to get to the United States.
By rescinding the political asylum agreements we had with Mexico to remain in Mexico and Central American countries, we kept these applicants outside the United States. The reversal of that policy under the Trump administration, with Biden reversing these policies, he has created a boondoggle for the traffickers, where they exploit these children, they separate them from their parents in Central America, and take them up this very dangerous journey.
From the USA Radio News Ohio Bureau, I'm Dan Naraki.
The Masters is underway from Augusta National Golf Club in Georgia. One of the PGA Tour's most prestigious tournaments returns to its regular April spot after it was pushed back to November last year. A limited number of fans will be allowed at this year's event. Among the favorites to take home the green jacket are Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, and Rory McIlroy. Johnson came away as a winner in 2020. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
And good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jim Gano, and this program is called Taking Care of Business. And for the next hour, we're going to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in the borough of Flemington in beautiful Hunterdon County, New Jersey, and on the national scene as well. That all happens right now on Taking Care of Business.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working overtime.
Well, I'm so glad you can join me. My name is Jim Gano. I'm the host of the program, and the program is called Taking Care of Business. So thank you for getting together with me, as we do every Thursday at this time, to talk about issues that affect business, large and small, because a lot of times, whether you own a small business, you can learn from the mistakes of large corporations or from the successes of large corporations. And, you know, vice versa, if a small business has success, that can go up the chain as well. To the larger businesses. If you are listening right now, you're either listening on WHCRDB, our digital channel, on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. We thank you for joining us there. The show is also being broadcast video live stream on Facebook on the show's page, Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. So either way you're able to join me, I'm glad that you are. Again, I always open it up and say that this show is for you, the small business owner. So if you have any questions or topics you want me to discuss, by all means, you can email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com. Be glad to do the research on them for you and then bring them to the program at a future date. And that can be anything from marketing to sales to customer service to problems with certain employees, onboarding your employees as we come back from COVID. I have a story about that later today. So, again, this show is for you, so let's make it work for you. When we start the program, we always start with our business quote of the week. It's brought to you each week at this time by Crown Trophy of Flemington. And this week it comes, and I use everything from actors, celebrities, business leaders, religious leaders. It doesn't matter. If it's something that's motivational, then I bring it to the program. And the quote this week comes to us from Tony Robbins, who says, "Stop being afraid of what could go wrong and start being excited about what could go right." And a lot of times, and particularly in relation to last year with COVID, it just seemed like everybody was waiting for the next shoe to drop, the next gray cloud to fly overhead. A lot of negativity in the world. Understandably so. We were put into a position that we weren't used to, and as a result, people just felt like, you know, we were never going to come out of this. And many businesses closed, so I can understand that mentality. But I also want you to think about how we got things right, and that is that for those that have survived the pandemic, whether you're a restaurant or a small business and are coming out of it, now you're looking at what, instead of what could go wrong, what could go right. And so hopefully you see that and you have that little bit of optimism. And regardless of your normal personality, you should always bring a little bit of optimism to your work every day. So hopefully, to quote Tony Robbins and follow up with his thought, stop being afraid of what could go wrong and start being excited about what could go right. Last week I updated you and said that my new book was released. It's called The Player by James Gannot, and doing very well in sales on Amazon.com, negotiating with various booksellers now to get it there. The book takes place in Central Jersey, largely in the Bridgewater, Raritan, Somerville area. There are a couple of businesses from Flemington mentioned here. Nothing better than what I'm doing right now, and that's holding your own work. I'm very proud of this. This is my second book. Very proud of this one. Currently working on my third and fourth fictional novel, as well as one business book that I've been talking about going through a rewrite because of COVID. So, again, if you are interested in that book, it's $12.95, available at Amazon.com. Or you can go to my website, jimgannot.com. For some reason, a lot of people are asking for signed copies. That's the only place where you can get them, is at jimgannot.com. So be glad to sign one of those and ship it off to you. And all the instructions are there. Just go to jimgannot.com, the shop tab, and then pick which book you'd like a copy of, either The Student or The Player. Our first story today is one that kind of scares me and also is revealing in a lot of ways, and that is how much money Americans in their 40s have in their 401k accounts. Now, it's always been said that the earlier you start saving for retirement, the better. And I can still recall 35, 37 years ago working for an insurance company and going into this big auditorium and having somebody come in from a financial institution to talk about signing us up for a 401k account. I think I was 23, 24 at the time. And you're not really thinking with your head at that age. You're not thinking of what happens when you're 60. And so this gentleman came in. He was talking to us about investing in a 401k account, a retirement account, so that by the time we got to the age of 60, we should be able to have at least $1 million in that account. And again, to us at the time, it was fiction because it was not you couldn't tangibly hold on to it. But I was smart enough to start saving in a 401k. And I think it was like $25 a week or something like that, whatever the max was. The company would match up to 3 or 5%. And so I was just making money. Every month or every quarter, I would get my statement, and it would say, oh, look, I made a little money. Great. Put that in a file drawer somewhere. And that really didn't become important to me until I was in my 40s and 50s and started saying, hey, we're getting closer to that retirement age. What do we have in the account now? And you look and say, okay, not bad. Would like it to be better. So again, the earlier you start saving for retirement, the better. Every young person I meet coming like straight out of college, getting their first job, I tell them, man, you got to invest in a 401k or an IRA, something that will help you. And what happens very often is that a lot of people at that age are thinking, well, I don't care about what happens when I'm 60. I'll take care of that when I'm 60. I'll start thinking about that when I'm 55 or 50. And by then, it's too late. So the youngsters or the young kids that listen to me, when you're 10 years out, 20 years out, all of a sudden they say, man, Mr. Gannot, I'm glad I really paid attention. I'm not telling them who to invest with. I'm not telling them who should be their financial planner. Just get a 401k. And now they see they have a little money in the bank. If they wanted to, take a loan against it, they could if they had to. But I always tell them, just hold on to it because you're going to need it one day. And now next month, I turn 60. And when I look at my statement and then I look at the balance and I look at, hey, I'm going to live till I'm 80 or 90, I'm comfortable in the fact of knowing I'm okay. My wife is okay. and we're set, so we're good. That's not because I'm a great businessman or anything. That's because I made a decision 37 years ago to invest in a 401k early in my career. But so many youngsters, they want to hold on to their money. Pre-COVID, it was all about the experience. They wanted to go to the bar on Friday night. They wanted to go to a club on Saturday night. They wanted to take trips and see things. And they used every penny of what they had. They didn't save anything. Many people put off saving for retirement early in their careers because of how distant in the future retirement seems. But experts say that starting to save early can make a huge difference in how much you end up with. Now, to help you if you're on track, retirement plan provider Fidelity set benchmarks for how much you should have saved at every age. And by 40, Fidelity recommends having three times of your salary put away. So if you're making $50,000, you should have at least $150,000 in the bank. If your annual salary is $100,000, then you should have $300,000 saved. I don't necessarily subscribe to this theory. It's a good theory, but I'd actually like to see you have more. So how much do 40-year-olds actually have in retirement savings? The average 401k balance for Americans between the ages of 40 and 49 is $120,800 as of the fourth quarter of 2020, according to data from Fidelity's retirement platform. Americans in this age group contribute an average of 8.9% of their salaries. So putting away three times your salary may seem daunting, but starting off by saving even 1 or 2% of your salary and gradually increasing that figure over time can go a long way toward helping you build up your retirement savings. And if your employer offers a match, try to contribute enough of your salary to qualify for the full match. It's essentially free money. So if your employer is saying, hey, we'll match up to 5% of what you do, then you give 5%. This way, it's equal. You're putting in your share, they're putting in their share. A lot of plans have kind of gotten away from the employer match now. But how much should you have saved for retirement? How much you should save for your retirement largely depends on the kind of lifestyle that you want for you and your family. Are you the type of person that wants to travel, see the world, own a second home, maybe have a boat, a nicer car? Whatever your lifestyle is going to be at the age of post-retirement or 60, that's what you should be saving for now. So that being said, experts at Fidelity recommend that you consistently save at least 15% of your salary over the course of your career in order to be prepared for retirement. So this is how much Fidelity is saying or recommending that Americans have saved at every age. By age 30, they say you should have the equivalent of your salary saved. So if you're making $50,000, you should have $50,000 in savings. By 40, three times your salary. By 50, six times your salary. By 60, you should have eight times your salary. And by 67, you should have at least 10 times of your salary saved. So, again, for the young people out there, as soon as you graduate college, if not before, as soon as you have a job, start putting money away. Banks offer 401ks. Eventually, you can transition that into a money manager, a financial planner, who can then take that money over and do more with it. For people in their 40s that haven't been saving, you have to start now. Because what's going to happen is you can't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to start saving. Let's say you're at 45, 50 years old. I'm going to start saving now for retirement. It's too late. So you start to save, and then in the years when you really want to start doing things like travel or vacations and stuff, suddenly you can't because there's just no money there. Yes, you can take out loans. Yes, you can take out second mortgages. But that's not the way you want to fund your retirement. So my recommendation is start a 401k as early as possible. Tell your children, start a 401k with their very first job. Put in the max. Even if it's 10%, 15%, whatever the maximum donation is, that's what you want to be putting in. Because there's no better feeling than looking at your statement as you're getting closer to retirement and saying, we're okay. You know, there's no better feeling than having your financial planner tell you, you're fine. You know, between your retirement plan and Social Security, you're in great shape. There's no better feeling than that. People say, well, you know, the stock market's a risk. It's again, yes, it is. But even with the hit that we took last year, we've recouped that loss and made more. So, and a lot more. So that's the point that I'm trying to drive home. If you're you know, my old financial planner used to have a saying, make your millions slowly. And what he meant was start in your 20s, invest in the 401k, and eventually as you get to, when you're older, you'll have the money there. Nothing better than that, than that advice. Make your millions slowly, and hopefully you'll have it. Now, what if you're in your late 40s, 50s, maybe even 60s, and you have no savings account for retirement, and you just have a little bit of savings in the bank? Start one now, because even if you grow it for 10 more years, it's better to know you have something there than nothing there. But so many people don't, and they'd rather have that money now, or they think they have to have that money now, and more than likely you don't. I think I read that only 28% of Americans have a 401k account. So I'm worried about the 72% that don't, because those are the people that are either going to have to work until the day they die, or they're going to become a burden on their children or something, because they just haven't planned for, when they're getting ready, when they should be getting ready to retire. How many of you know friends and family who are retiring now, and you're sitting there going, well, I got to put in another 5 or 10 years, and I got to save like crazy before I can get there, or I might have to sell my house, and take the profit to create some kind of a retirement account. So this is trying to help you eliminate that. If you've been invested in a 401k, great. If not, start today. Call a financial planner and get involved. There is a shortage in the restaurant industry that is becoming very serious. And by restaurant, I mean everything from McDonald's to, a finer restaurant. And that is that, and think back to last March, April, when you couldn't find toilet paper, you couldn't find paper towels, you couldn't find Lysol. There's another shortage going on now, and it's almost comical, but it can be serious. And that is individual ketchup packets are in high demand, and suppliers can't seem to keep up with it. So since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, the price for individual ketchup packets has increased by 13%, the Wall Street Journal reported. Restaurants have been trying to stock up on the packets since the CDC recommended to avoid using or sharing items that are reusable, such as menus, condiments, and any other food containers. That, combined with many eateries reverting to takeout only, where packets would be included, has resulted in a shortage at chains like Long John Silver's and Texas Roadhouse. To combat the shortage, Heinz, which is America's most widely used ketchup brand, plans to increase single-serve packet production by about 25% to produce over 12 billion packets per year. In the meantime, restaurants have been left to scramble for other generic ketchup brands. We're busy doing everything we can, says Steve Cornell, Kraft Heinz president of Enhancers, Specialty and Away from Home Business Unit, he told the Wall Street Journal. Retail sales for bottles of ketchup also soared over the past year, jumping over 15% compared to condiment sales in 2019. The ketchup is not the only food to be facing shortages during the pandemic. This is where it gets serious, folks. Pizza shops have been struggling to purchase pepperoni. According to Bloomberg, restaurants have been experiencing higher prices from pepperoni suppliers, and in some cases, the cost has risen nearly double. Not only are the prices increasing, but the demand for pepperoni has been highly outweighing the supply. Other meat products like ground beef were experiencing similar shortage earlier this year, but all are recovering aside from the pepperoni. There are reportedly two main reasons for the current pepperoni shortage. First, pork processing plants have had to reduce worker numbers to adhere to local social distancing guidelines, making it more difficult to produce the meat in a timely fashion. And second, the demand for pizza has risen significantly during the pandemic as people are ordering food in more. So when you start telling me there's a shortage in pepperoni, I'm getting worried, I'm getting nervous, and I call my local pizza shop and make sure that, we have that on the menu. Lent is now over, so tomorrow night's dinner, my wife and I on a Friday night would typically order out. She'll get her margarita pizza, and I fluctuate, but there's a good chance I'm leaning towards going back to a stromboli, and I'd want pepperoni in there. God help us if there's a shortage on that. hopefully you understand where I'm coming from on that. I want to talk to you about Major League Baseball for a minute, and how they recently struck out. Now, they're allowing fans back in the stands and things like that, but they really had a play this in the past 2 weeks where they could have just let, you know, things go on as they were. Instead, they took a knee-jerk reaction, and I think it's going to end up hurting them overall. We saw the NFL last year get hurt with the support of the Black Lives Matter movement. We saw the NBA get hurt with the support of the Black Lives Matter movement. And now Major League Baseball has come out and made a move, and it's really going to bite them in the butt a little bit. So here we go again, sports intersecting with politics. And that's where, regardless of the cause, that's where fans are getting tired when politics enters the sport world. You know, when people go to a football game, go to a baseball game, go to a basketball game, a NASCAR race or a hockey game, they're going to be entertained. They're not going to, you know, have someone else's politics thrust upon them when all they wanted to do was watch a game. I can remember somebody telling me that they went to a Bruce Springsteen concert and a Barbara Streisand concert, and they were lectured for 10 minutes on the politics of the world, and they're like, that's not why, just sing the song, you know. I think there was the old expression, just dribble and shoot the ball. And that's what people want. You know, they don't necessarily want to be lectured by their favorite entertainers. But Major League Baseball has decided to move its All-Star game out of Atlanta over the new Georgia voting bill. Now, this is a big deal. It warrants a discussion, so here goes. This is my opinion, and I don't expect you to agree or disagree, but I think this is a bad move for Major League Baseball. For starters, Rob Manfred just thumbed his nose in a very overt way at half of his fan base, if not more. In the poll that was published last week, the number of people turning off sports on television because of its intersection with politics is three times the number who are turning on TVs for the same reason. It's a significant net negative that will undoubtedly hurt baseball in its pocketbook, and who knows for how long. Now, having read the bill, which, by the way, is much more of a time suck than 3 minutes on Ukrainian darts, there are things in it that I agree with, things in it that I disagree with, but for the most part, it falls within the ballpark of what I would consider to be reasonable. But because there is no room for a nuance in discussion anymore, any disagreement immediately metastasizes into assumption that the other side is absolutely evil, which is how, hey, let's provide water for voters, but maybe not have special interest groups with an agenda doing it, becomes you're making it illegal to provide water to voters. And the activist wing of the media, one of the closet as a massive collective now, churns that butter counterclockwise nearly every time. Corporate America has seen how this works and figured out that if they simply go along, boom, a new narrative develops where it's no longer the boogeyman. So when the spears do come out, having curried favor with the right people, it's not at the tip of them. And that's how an All-Star game is moved out of town. The Twitter mob will be happy with Rob Manfred, but Twitter is not built for reasonable discussion, and now reasonable people will make the decision if baseball is worth their time or not. I've pretty much given up on Major League Sports for the reason cited. I just want to watch a game. I don't really want to watch and be lectured or have someone else's viewpoint, you know, thrust down my face. I enjoy the sport of basketball, but I just want to see guys running up and down the court, shooting, playing good defense. I don't necessarily have to have a movement, you know, thrust upon me. Same with football. I enjoy the game. I love the strategy. I love offense and defense, and what are we going to do on fourth and two? I don't necessarily want to hear the lecture, regardless of the movement at that time. We'll save that for the evening news. And it's starting to cross over into so many sports. Football, basketball, now baseball. And I think Charles Barkley, he had a great quote the other day. I'll try to look it up during the break. But he had a great quote the other day, and it kind of summed it up best. And, you know, Charles is a black man, and he kind of came out on the side of, you know, we're all stupid. You know, we've all got to get together and get along. And until we do that, we're never going to, you know, come up with any kind of solution. So, you know, I'll watch college until they ruin that. I still announce and enjoy watching high school football and basketball until somebody ruins that. But, you know, for the most part, I'm done with pro sports. And this has happened a couple times over my career. Years ago, the NFL had a strike, I believe. They had a lockout. And this goes back 20, 30 years. I didn't watch football for 3 or 4 years. The only thing that brought me back into it was the game of fantasy football, because now I had to follow what my players were doing, and then eventually I realized my love for the game. Baseball, same thing. I think there was a strike or a lockout, and when you have millionaires arguing that they want more money, it just bothered me, and so I just walked away. The only thing that brought me back into the game was when I started working for the Somerset Patriots as one of their announcers. You know, now it was fun to see the ballpark. It was fun to see the people, and I enjoyed that. But I'm just tired of the lecturing and the constant browbeating of why I'm a bad person, you know, because I'm watching a game or not supporting a movement 100%. So, like I said, I think I'm done with pro sports. A friend of mine texted me yesterday. She was in Philadelphia for the Phillies-Mets game. Could have cared less, you know. And if she had called me and said, do you want to go to the game? My answer would have been no. And I've never been to – I'm a Philly fan. I've never been to Citizens Bank Park. I would love to see that ballpark. I just have no desire to spend my money on millionaires that are going to beg for more money. It's lost its luster for me. And we'll see how it all turns out in the end. When we come back from the news break, we're going to have a story about companies that are about to get pelted by employee turnover as the pandemic ends and why. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Forecasters say the atmosphere is reloading to drop damaging and dangerous storms from Texas to Georgia. This after severe weather drilled the plains and the Mississippi Valley this week. Storms including what meteorologists called preliminary tornadoes damaged homes in Louisiana yesterday. President Biden is signing executive actions aimed at new gun restrictions.
Taking steps to confront not just the gun crisis, but what is actually a public health crisis. Nothing I'm about to recommend in any way impinges on the Second Amendment.
Biden also tapping a big gun control advocate to lead the ATF. David Chipman was a veteran at the ATF before joining a gun control group. Biden made the announcement during his Rose Garden event and called Chipman the right person at this important moment to lead the ATF. USA Radio News.
Rockstar Radio. Did you know this station, this network, is looking for their next rockstar broadcaster? That's right, we are. And it could be you. It could be you interviewing the guests, talking to the newsmakers right in the middle of everything. Have you ever dreamed of being a rockstar show host? Now could be your chance. Together with this station, we'll help you with everything you need. The studios, the equipment, your own producer, a co-host if you'd like, and so much more. Broadcasting is changing. There's never been a need for fresh voices and unique opinions like there is right now. You can do this. Our professional team will guide you every step of the way. Sound effects, show content, building your social network media, and everything you need to be the next rockstar broadcaster. Get all the details. Email Bill at rockstar.today. That's Bill at rockstar.today. To get started with your own show, email Bill at rockstar.today. That's Bill at rockstar.today. Don't wait. You could be the next voice for America. Email Bill at rockstar.today.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working overtime.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join me. My name is Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington. Also the owner of Signs by Crown and the author of the new book recently released last week called The Player by James Gano. Hope you'll enjoy that. I appreciate all the people who have purchased the book so far, currently ranking in the top 500 on Amazon in sales, so glad to hear that. And the feedback so far has been very positive from people. They really enjoy the story, so glad to hear that as well. I wanted to go over something that happened to me this morning because it was serious, and then when it's over, it's a little comical at the same point. I'm driving on 202 South heading into work today, and there's a truck in front of me at the Branchburg Police Station. I look at this truck, and it's got a kayak in it. It's got a bicycle in it. It's got one of those really tall
like cat plaything, you know, where it's like different levels and cats can, you know, crawl around it and scratching posts and stuff like that. And I said, man, that's a cornucopia of stuff he's got in the back of this truck. So we turn left to get onto 202, and we're driving about a mile or two up the road. And all of a sudden, in front of me, I just see debris. It's kind of like when you watch a NASCAR race and you see smoke. All of a sudden, I'm just seeing debris. And I realize that's the cat house that has now fallen off the truck. It's cartwheeling down the highway. It's splintering and breaking up, and it's in my lane. So I very quickly have to swerve to the right. Now I'm in the right lane, and luckily there was nobody near me there. Then a little bit further, I mean, within a quarter of a mile, all of a sudden I see something else in the middle of the road clanging all over the place. And that was a men's bicycle, full-size men's bicycle that had fallen off the truck and was now in my lane, in the right lane, cartwheeling. There's no way I'm going to miss this thing, so I quickly swerve to the left and get out of its way. Now I'm back in the left lane. And it wasn't maybe 300 feet further up that the kayak comes falling out of the back of the truck. It starts cartwheeling all over the highway. It's in my lane. I have to swerve back to the right to miss it. And, you know, now in the span of quarter mile, half a mile, this man has left a cat scratching post, a bicycle, and a kayak in the middle of the road. So I speed up, catch up to him, flash him, and pull him over. I said, are you aware that all the stuff in the back of your truck is like laying all over the highway right now? And he looks in the back and goes, where's the kayak? Where's the bicycle? You know, and I go, it's about a mile down the road. So he quickly made a U-turn and went to get it. But I was like, wow, you know, the quick thinking I had to do to get out of the way and how scary it was. You know, your heart's going 100 miles an hour. And, you know, and then finally everything settled down. But it was like, wow, that was something. And could have been disastrous, you know, had some of those splinters of wood, you know, flown up, hit my windshield, or had the bicycle hit my truck, or God forbid the kayak, you know, went through my front windshield. It could have been a disaster. But, you know, lesson to be learned, as I always preach to my wife and others, is maintain a safe following distance, because you have to have room to react. You know, and if you're right on top of them, there's really no room. Had I been tailgating that person and the bike came out, the bike would have been a fixture on my would have been my new hood ornament. And also, if you're the one traveling with all this stuff in the back of your truck, make sure it's tied down. This guy didn't have one rope, one strap, nothing. Make sure it's tied down and secured. And even then, if you're the person behind him, give him a little extra room, because you never know if they know what they're doing when they tie these things down. So it was just, you know, scary moment. And glad it turned out all right, but holy cow, that was not the way I wanted to start my day, you know, driving to work this morning. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening, or what could be happening to companies as we come out of the pandemic. And it looks as if companies are going to suffer a lot of employee turnover. 1 in 4 workers, 26%, plans to look for a job at a different company once the pandemic has subsided, according to Prudential's latest Pulse of the American Worker survey conducted by Morning Consult back in March. Now, why does this matter? High-skilled workers with plenty of opportunities are the hardest to replace. This massive reshuffling also will create major headaches for employers and will likely expand the gaps between men and women in the workplace. So, if you want to look at it by the numbers, the number of workers planning to bolt their jobs is even higher. It's 34% for millennials, the largest generation in the workforce today. And of those planning to leave their current job, 80% are concerned about their career growth. Nearly 75% say the pandemic made them rethink their skill sets. If there's one thing that keeps me up at night, it's the talent flight risk, said Prudential Vice Chairman Rob Thousand. Now that the pandemic's economic threat is easing up, business leaders need to get back to looking more intently at our talent and ensuring we are giving them opportunities, even in a remote environment, or we're going to lose them. What does that mean? If you're in management or in ownership of a business, you have got to be looking at your talent pool. And by talent pool, I mean, you know, your employees, your workforce. Are you giving them the opportunities, both in office or remotely, to grow? And that's the one thing that a lot of people have been complaining about over the past year. They're doing their job. They're thankful they have a job, but they feel like they still haven't grown. They can't grow. You know, what are you, the vice president of the kitchen? Because that's where you have your computer. So it's a good time to take your own survey with your employees and say, where are you at? What are you thinking? And where do you want to be? How do you want to continue working? How has the pandemic affected you? Do a survey with them, both written and then sitting down face-to-face or Zooming and asking them, how can we make the work environment better? How can we make your job better? The worst thing that can happen is you lose 26% of your workforce. Now you've got to go through the whole hiring, training, retraining, et cetera. So high-performing workers are the most concerned about career advancement in their current jobs, and they no longer feel geographically tied to local employers in a remote world. That's going to continue. If the pandemic has proven one thing, it's that we don't all have to drive to the same home office. We can work anywhere, you know, and not just work from home 20 miles away. You could work from home 200, 300 miles away or more. The big picture is that most workers say they want to work remotely at least part of the time, even after offices reopen. Multiple surveys suggest, despite the benefits, that hybrid environments also create new workplace tensions. Nearly half of remote workers say they'd be nervous about job security if they stayed remote while colleagues returned to the office, per Prudential survey. I think I had a story on that a couple of weeks ago, that there was this dynamic shift. If there's people that are going to an office and then there's still people working remotely, that you could be, if you're working remotely, you could be overlooked for promotions simply because you're not in the office to where the boss can actually see you working. If you want to read between the lines, worker burnout will also contribute to the talent flight. As workers put in more hours remotely, take less time off, juggle childcare duties, and deal with general pandemic stress. Some workers may believe they need to change jobs to get a better grip on their work-life balance or to find a place where they feel more connected. Nearly half of employees surveyed by Prudential said that they feel disconnected to their companies a year after working remotely, partly because they are missing the benefits of interacting with people outside their teams and getting face time with higher-ups in the office. This culture decay can lead people to be more likely to hop to a new employer. Another reality check is the new work dynamics may have profound consequences for women, who at least initially are less likely to return full-time to the workforce or to the work site. This may worsen the gender pay gap if managers perceive on-site workers to be higher performers, says Axios's Erica Pandy. And while white-collar workers may be eager to move around, people who lost their service, retail, and hospitality industry jobs are less likely to have new opportunities for quite some time. Many will need to learn new skills for other types of jobs. People are becoming more optimistic about their financial and professional prospects as the pandemic progresses, according to new figures from Oliver Wyman's ongoing Global Consumer Survey. That may suggest people will be willing to look for new options later this year. But there's still a gender gap. Men are 1.5 times more optimistic than women about their financial well-being and 1.2 times more optimistic than women about their professional career, per the survey. Key part of rebuilding after COVID-19 will be ensuring companies do not create second-class citizens in a hybrid workplace, and that workers, particularly women, have equitable opportunities, said Anna Krasik, who's the partner and chief operating officer of the Oliver Wyman Forum. So, again, there's going to be, as we come back to the office environment, I think what we're going to see is about a quarter of the workforce leaves, looks for other opportunities. Some may take early retirement, but ultimately it looks like there's going to be a lot of job change and moving around. So you want to make sure there's a good time if you're the employee who wants to take or wants to make a move. Resume's got to be up to date. Interview skills have to be polished. And you have to make sure that it is the right time and opportunity for you. And that means consulting with spouse or partner to make sure that everybody's on board with making a change. Making a change for change's sake is not the best idea. Let's talk about an area that I'm familiar with, not so familiar with, but I wanted to delve into a little bit. And it's one that, as I talk to people throughout the pandemic, this term has kept coming up more and more. And when people will start a conversation, well, I talked to my life coach, or I've talked to my business coach. And I'm like, what the heck is a life coach? But, you know, let's delve into that. So what is life coaching? It's not therapy, which was my misconception, but it is a nearly $3 billion business. So what exactly is a life coach? And it seems that even Google can't precisely explain it. When you search the term, Google returns sites from Oprah and Tony Robbins trying to answer this exact question. And perhaps that's because life coaching can be just a little bit fuzzy. The membership-based coaching organization, International Coaching Federation, the ICP, defines coaching as partnering with clients in a thought-provoking and creative process that inspires them to maximize their personal and professional potential. It's a lot of words, but ultimately what it's trying to do is, the way one life coach put it to me was, she wants to get people's lives on track. A lot of times people, and the way she described it was, people are going through the motions, if you will. They're waking up, going to work, coming home, spending time with family, but there's no forward progress. So she says she's the engineer trying to get the train on the track. Life coaching is also completely unregulated, and scandals of life coaches running Ponzi schemes or college admission schemes haven't helped the profession's reputation either. Still, the life coaching industry is thriving. Life coaching is part of a $2.85 billion global industry of professional coaches, according to the ICF. Beyond life coaching, there's also executive, career, leadership, and even nutrition coaching. ICF estimates that there are 71,000 professional coaches worldwide and 23,000 based here in North America. The profession is growing. Between 2015 and 2019, the number of professional coaches worldwide increased by 33% globally and 33% in North America, based on ICP's 2020 Global Coaching Study final report. And I'll have what you need to know in a minute. Life coaching can be as simple, and the one woman that I spoke to mentioned this, she goes, it can be as simple as getting people organized. From running their day-to-day lives, literally task by task, to getting them organized in how to be more productive at work, to being a better parent, a better spouse, or something like that. It depends on what area you want to improve. So again, what is a life coach? Well, here's what you need to know. Life coaches work with functioning individuals who are looking to create a pathway to reaching set goals. Whether it is work, personal, or family, coaches act as unbiased thinking partners and hold their clients accountable by typically having weekly or biweekly one-hour sessions. The process of coaching often unlocks previously untapped sources of imagination, productivity, and leadership, according to ICF, the largest coaching organization and closest to a regulatory body. The average cost of a session is around $244, according to the ICF, but costs can rise as high as $1,000 per session. Where the lady that I spoke to wanted me to make a differentiation was, a life coach is working with you individually. And, you know, as she talked about Oprah and Anthony Robbins, she also mentioned they're speaking more globally. This is what we want you to do. You'll be a better person. Everything will be great. Life coach is holding your feet to the fire. You say you're going to do something, and when you meet next week or the following week, you're going to have to report back on what you did to make the certain improvements. Now, the industry of life coaching is unregulated. Life coaching, as a profession, requires no formal education, training, or licensing. And this allows virtually anyone to call themselves a coach. Elise Parker is a 26-year-old YouTube influencer and life coach, and she holds no credentials or education in the life coach profession. She has nearly 1 million social media followers and has documented her day-to-day life on her YouTube channel, everything from moving to relationships to health and wellness. She noticed many of her followers expressing appreciation for sharing her life routine and wanting to follow in her footsteps, and this led her to create a 12-week group seminar that cost $3,000 per person. The birth of this group coaching program came to me from sharing my journey authentically for years and receiving so many questions and comments on, like, I wish I could be living my dream life. I wish I could have the courage and bravery to really go after my dreams, things of that nature. And Parker feels that the openness of life coaching has enabled her to coach over 200 women in the last 4 years. I do believe with the that the flexibility and the openness for me to create what I want out of this, of course, within the realm of life coaching. It has been a huge element of why it works so perfectly for me as a person, she says. Don't think necessarily of I'll have 200 clients and they'll pay me $3,000, you know, for this 12-week course. You have to develop a curriculum that people are going to want. A lot of people call themselves a life coach, and I've seen some of them. Some of them have called me and said they want to be my life coach, and I'm like, don't really need that. And you know, they're nothing more than people who will spout off motivational quotes and things like that. That's not a life coach. You know, that's a Tony Robbins wannabe. What you're looking for in a life coach is someone who can guide you and fix your habits to be where you want to get to. Not somebody who's just going to read you motivational quotes and blow smoke up your butt and tell you how wonderful you are. So the accountability from the life coach perspective of somebody who's going to help you create that path you want to get on and then get you there, that's what you're looking for. So it's not psychotherapy, if you will. Psychotherapy is a collaboration between a licensed therapist and a client using research-based techniques that help people develop more effective habits and live happier, healthier lives, according to the American Psychological Association. Psychologists predominantly provide assessment, can diagnose different mental health conditions, provide psychotherapy intervention, says Amanda Spray, who's a clinical associate professor of psychiatry at the NYU Langone Institute. Whereas a psychiatrist has gone to medical school, and they can also do psychotherapy. They're uniquely trained in the provision of psychotropic medications as well. You cannot call yourself a psychologist without being licensed as a licensed psychologist in the state in which you practice, Spray said. Life coaching increased popularity may be due to the fact that it is not therapy. Coaches and therapists are often explicit about the differences. Life coach Daniel Copsey in New Jersey says that she's been in situations where she started working with a client and it became clear that they needed to be referred to a therapist instead. How that becomes apparent is you just literally cannot move forward. All the conversation is past-based, and all the conversation comes from a perspective of all this stuff is happening to me, and part of that is also getting trained to understand what the difference is. While it's important to understand the differences when seeking a coach, life coaching may act as a needed step to get someone the mental health treatment that they need. Despite the fact that many high-functioning people go to therapy to enrich their lives, there's still the stigma associated with mental health treatment, Spray explains. But we're making a lot of progress, she says. There have been great public awareness campaigns that have made it more acceptable to speak with mental health professionals. So, again, you have to know the difference between a life coach, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a psychotherapist, and make sure that you're not looking for a life coach who's going to suddenly become your counselor. They can advise you on how to make you achieve certain goals, but they're not there to figure out why you're having problems with your mother or some other, you know, stereotypical answer. So, and the same holds true with a business coach. You know, if you're going to pick a business coach, and I have coached several companies, hundreds of companies, restore them to profitability. I do charge for that service. Pick somebody who has been successful and can prove to you that they've been successful, can show you sales metrics and how they've increased over time, or can show you case studies of people they've worked with and said, here's where they were. 2 years later, here's where they are. And then they should have a list of referrals and references so that you can go to them and say, I know you worked with this individual as a business coach. What did they do for you? And a business coach should not be – the one mistake that a lot of people make is that when they hire a business coach, they think that the business coach is going to come in and do the work for them. That's not why you get into business coaching. You already have a job. And as a client, you shouldn't be thinking that somebody's going to do the work for you. When you call a business coach, it's because you need help. Think of shows like Bar Rescue, Restaurant Impossible, and things like that. You already have a business. It's not working. When you call in guys like Jake Tapper to come and rescue your business, it's because you have failed or it's just not working anymore. And they'll, from an outside perspective, we can come in and look and say, here's where I think you need to make certain changes. And if you're willing to make that change, then you can achieve incredible growth, incredible new structure and processes. But if you're not willing to make the growth, it's just going to constantly be this friction point between the two of you. So you want to make sure that the person knows what they're doing. And again, when you get to the point where you're calling for help, that's when you know that it's time for the business coach. If you think of Marcus Lemonis with CNBC's The Profit, when he goes into a business, and if you've ever, I know I've mentioned his show several times on this program, but if you see him go into a business, he's not there to, you know, run your business. He's there to show you how you can run the business better, what improvements you need to make in your people, in your process, and your product. And everybody should start there. Do you have the right people in place to run your business? The number one for me is the process. Does it work? Is everybody following it to the letter? And finally, the profit. Are you making money? Sometimes that comes down to knowing, is your product price right for the market? And very often you'll find that it's not, that you could be making more. So you want to make sure that when you're in that situation where you need help, that you're getting the right business coach. Because there's a lot of people out there that will just take your money, talk to you for a little bit, cash that check, but you don't see any real progress. If you work with me, I'm going to give you measurable goals. And I'm going to say, you know, this is what I want you to do this week. We'll talk next Wednesday at 10 o'clock. And if you come to me next Wednesday at 10 o'clock and you haven't held up your end of the bargain, there's a good chance I'm going to fire you and give you your check back because it just shows you don't have that level of commitment. I did that with an individual once where I wanted to see – I gave them a marketing assignment. I said, I need this by next Wednesday. They came back to my office, and I said, okay, show me what you did. And I got two blank stares, two people sitting across me, and two blank stares. I said, you didn't do anything in a week? You know, you didn't make 50 new contacts? And, you know, they just hadn't put in the effort. And I said, this is where we're going to remain friends, but I'm going to fire you as a client. And I said, you know, I'm not going to, you know, take your money because you're just not committed. And about a week later, the son called me and said, you know, if I promise to work with you and do everything you say, will you work with me? And nobody had ever done that. You know, but it showed that now he had a commitment. I said, I'll do it. But again, if you don't do exactly as I say, we're done. We doubled the size of that business in 2 years. And, you know, it's one of my great success stories because the mother was afraid to grow the business by even 10%. Here we grew it by 100%. We doubled the size of the business in 2 years. And she told me something that was very funny. She said, it's actually the more money we make, the easier the job gets. That's a success. You know, that's a win. You know, so be careful when we talk about life coaches. Be careful when we talk about business coaches. You know, a life coach is a great thing if it's going to improve your life. And you're going to pay these people. Business coach is a great thing if they're going to improve your business, your processes, your product, your people, and ultimately your profit. If they're not doing it, get rid of them and either A, find somebody else, or B, do it yourself. Very often you'll find that you can do a lot of this yourself, but we get so bogged down with all the minutiae of running a business that we forget that we have these skills. So make sure that you're out there actively working on and in your business and working on and in your life. That's about it for this week. Next week, I'm going to have a story on the top skills you need to highlight if you want to get hired this year in 2021 by a company. And we're going to also talk about how to identify new business opportunities, something that every business should be looking at coming out of the pandemic. Are there other business opportunities for you, other partnerships, co-promotions you can be doing with competitors that will help you? And I'll give you a real-world example of something I'm going through right now. That may motivate you into making this change. As always, it's been my pleasure joining you today, and I always end the program with some great advice I got from my father when I was just 6 years old that guides me in my personal and professional life every day. Maybe you can use it in your lives as well when he said, never let it rest until you're good is better and your better is best. If you have ideas for upcoming program topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter at JimGano83, or on Facebook on the show's page, Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. For more information about me and my businesses or any of the books I've written, visit www.jimgano.com. I'm Jim Gano, and I'm taking care of business. Make it a productive week, everybody. And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working overtime. Work out.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Gun violence in this country is an epidemic and it's an international embarrassment.
And with that, President Biden is signing a series of executive orders aimed at curbing gun violence. The president is limited to what he can do regarding gun violence without broader action by the House and Senate. Senators will soon take up the House-passed legislation expanding background checks, but it faces a tough road in the tightly divided Senate. The Defense Department is working as quickly as possible to get coronavirus vaccines in the arms of U.S. troops stationed overseas.
We're administering the vaccine as fast as we receive it. The good news is this week we're distributing significantly more Pfizer and Moderna vaccine to our sites than in previous weeks.
Army Lieutenant General Ronald Pace delivering the message at a Pentagon briefing. Pace acknowledging frustration among those who have not yet been vaccinated. USA Radio News.
Could an ancient mystery be determining the events of our time? Could it reveal the secret of our future? Are recent events a warning that we are approaching judgment? How much time do we have left? Author Jonathan Kahn releases the book that reveals what could not be revealed until now. His newest New York Times bestseller, The Harbinger 2, The Return, embark on an epic journey to uncover the mysteries and revelations that are changing the world and will change your life. Available online and wherever fine books are sold.
We need the forklift over here.
Indeed, knows unexpected growth can stretch your business thin.
Okay, those molds need to be adjusted. The shippers are coming at noon, so we got to get this done.
Like at Dennis's plastic startup, to stay flexible, he needs to get started hiring right away.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. And the moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first sponsored job post. Terms and conditions apply.
Famous zookeeper Jack Hanna is suffering from dementia.
The family of animal expert Jack Hanna says the former director of the Columbus Zoo has been diagnosed with dementia. In a letter on Twitter, the Hanna family announced that Jack Hanna would be stepping away from public life as his health begins to deteriorate. Doctors believe the 74-year-old is suffering from Alzheimer's disease. Hanna is best known for his many appearances on television talk shows, where he brought hosts like Johnny Carson and Dave Letterman up close and personal with wild animals. He also hosted several nature shows for children. Hanna was the director of the Columbus Zoo from 1978 to his retirement last year and remains director emeritus. From the USA Radio News Ohio Bureau, I'm Dan Naraki.
At least five people are dead after a mass shooting near Rock Hill, South Carolina. Dr. Robert Leslie and his wife Barbara and their two grandchildren were among those killed. Police say the suspect lived on the same road as the doctor, but that's all they're saying right now as the investigation is still underway. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wyatt Cox. Each and every day, the USA Radio Network produces 3 hours of the greatest radio programs of all time. Comedies, drama, suspense, it's all there. Classic radio theater. Now, if your radio station doesn't carry the program, you can find them anywhere podcasts are served, including iHeartRadio, Spotify, Spreaker. Just search for USA Classic Radio Theater. Find it. USA Classic Radio Theater. You'll love it.
The tourism and hospitality community in Cobb County, Georgia, is saddened about the relocation of the Major League Baseball All-Star Game and Draft. The event would have directly impacted the county as out-of-state visitors spend their dollars on local accommodations, transportation, entertainment, and recreation. Cobb County is still recovering after the COVID-19 pandemic, and it's said that they lost somewhere around $100 million in revenue. Alfredo Ortiz is the executive director of the Job Creators Network.
They are barely making it out of the COVID-19 crisis, that is pandemic, and now they're faced under the Biden administration with potentially higher taxes, a higher minimum wage, higher, you know, more red tape and regulations, and now this. These small business owners, especially in Cobb, I mean, a lot of these are minority-owned businesses that were really looking forward and desperately needed this kind of revenue in stream. And so, and all because, quite frankly, there was a misinterpretation or misunderstanding or, quite frankly, just an outright lie of the law that was passed here in Georgia on voting rights. And the bottom line is that law, it just makes it easy to vote and hard to cheat.
That audio, courtesy of Fox News. And finally, and coincidentally, it was back on this date in 1974 when Hank Aaron of the Atlanta Braves hits his 715th career home run, breaking Babe Ruth's legendary record of 714 homers. For USA Radio News,